Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Rick Takahashi, and he'll be answering your questions on the art of fly fishing. And this show will be 90 minutes in length, and we'll be broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Rick a question, just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. You'll see a form in the right-hand column. Just fill in your name and email address, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to the website at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Rick Takahashi about the art of fly tying. Baja Fly Fishing Company is dedicated to fulfilling your vacation dreams, and just so there's no mistake, they derive as much pleasure helping a novice improve as they do fishing with a pro. From the casual to the hardcore, they can match your expectations with their experience and coaching. A vacation with the Baja Fly Fishing is more than a fishing trip. It's a full-on Baja experience that you will remember forever. They know the Baja after 40 years of traveling its back roads, kayaking its shoreline, surfing and snorkeling while pioneering the fly fishing techniques that have evolved into the tactics used today. They are well-versed in fly fishing the beach, in kayaks, on pongas, and are well-versed in all tackle types. Join them in pursuit of roosterfish, dorado, marlin, sailfish, wahoo, jack crevalle, yellowfin, skipjack, and many other species. Learn more about Baja Fly Fishing Company by visiting their website at www.bajaflyfish.com. Again, that's bajaflyfish.com. Before we introduce Rick, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Rick's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Rick's book, The Fly Tying Artist, courtesy of Stackpole Books. Here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question or questions, sometimes they're two-part, that we ask at the end of the show. And it'll be about something that Rick and I talk about during the show. So submit your answer along with your name and location in the text box on our homepage, and you may win Rick's book. So take good notes, type fast, and see what happens. Our guest tonight is Rick Takahashi. Rick loves to tie and design fly patterns for the waters that he fishes. Rick has been tying flies since the age of 8 years old. After taking apart his first Royal Coachman and seeing the hackle unwind, he knew he wanted to learn how to tie flies. Rick has used his talents to bring others into the realm of fly tying. He is a demonstration fly tier, often displaying his skills at the local and regional venues such as the Denver Fly Fishing Show, International Sportsman's Exhibition, Federation of Fly Fishermen Conclave, and at various regional shops near Denver. He is an illustrator and contributor to the Fly Fisherman magazine, and his art has been used for the Federation of Fly Fishermen Conclave, and he is working on a presentation of midge fishing for his local Unlimited chapter. Rick has written three books, his first, Modern Midges, Tying, Fishing the World's Most Effective Pattern, and along with Modern Terrestrials, and now The Fly Tying Artist. Rick's goal is to share with others of various aspects of fly fishing and fly tying he's learned. It's the teacher in me that wants to share knowledge on an activity that has meant so much to me. Rick is a retired art educator and former art department chairman of the Rocky Mountain High School, and he teaches fly tying course for Angler's Roost and makes his home in Fort Collins, Colorado with his wife Susan, daughter Haley, and son Josh. So, Rick, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Good to be with you again, Roger.
Yeah, we've done a show on midges, we've done a show on terrestrials, and now we'll get even more in-depth into fly tying, which I know is a love of your life. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, we got lots of questions come in tonight, and we're going to kind of delve into some of the patterns you tie and why, okay, and materials you use. And But first, we got a bunch of questions in from our audience, and let's just start out, a little bit of your background more in depth than I gave just now. How did you first get interested in fly fishing and fly tying?
Well, you know, I believe that I was born to be a fisherman, and to my earliest recollections, I wanted to fish, and I hadn't even been fishing. And I had the opportunity of when I was a young kid to have a neighbor take all of the neighborhood kids to Washington Park in Denver for a Huck Finn Day. And I had never been fishing before, but I stood there with my rod, and then we put on a salmon egg on a gold Wright McGill salmon egg hook, and I caught a little rainbow, and I was so excited about them. I wouldn't let them touch them, and I didn't want to catch another one. I just wanted to walk around and parade around with that with that fly until actually the fly dried up and had rigor mortis and was all curled up, and I had to bury it when I got home. But I think I was born to be a fly fisherman, and I always loved art. In fact, I had trouble in first grade because I didn't learn how to read because I was looking at, you know, the pictures more than I was learning how to read. So, you know, it's art and fly tying and fly fishing have been a part of my life for all these years.
Yeah, and the two go well together, art and fly fishing, don't they?
Remember, yeah, when I was a little kid, you know, I used to walk, when we go on picnics or something, when we had the chance to go on picnics and things like that, walk around the lake. Didn't have any fishing equipment or anything, but I find, you know, remnants of somebody who had been fishing prior, and, you know, I find sinkers, you know, those little sinker boxes and a hook maybe, and maybe a broken bobber, and I've collected all those things, and I wondered what they were for. And then I had an uncle of mine a visit, and I have two uncles who really played a major role in my development. And one of my uncles came to visit. He was on leave from the service, and he brought one of those little sea survival kits, and in it it had a squid jig in there, and I didn't know what it was, but it was on a wire, and it was fairly long wire, and I'd take that thing out and look at it and just wonder, geez, what do you do with this? And so I definitely remember seeing that, and got pretty excited.
How did you get started fly tying then?
Well, you know, I had this love, and I caught that one fish, and I thought, oh, this is great. And my dad would give us, like a quarter a week if we did our room, and if I didn't beat up on my sisters, he'd give me a quarter. And I'd take that quarter, and I'd go down to the local hardware store that carried some fishing equipment in there, and I just spent hours in there, and I still do that, you know, to this day. I can spend hours in the fly shop, and the fly shop I work at, I sometimes just will go in there just to look at the materials, and geez, you know, I helped buy some of that material and requested some of that material, and I already know what it is, but I just love everything that's involved with that. And as you mentioned in your intro there, that the first thing I bought was the first fly I ever bought was a Royal Coachman, you know, a standard traditional Royal Coachman. And I would take that thing home, and I think it cost just about like 27 cents. And I would take that thing home and look at it every day and take it on and just wonder, wow, how did they do it? And I didn't know what it was used for, but I knew it was for fishing because there was a hook there. And then one day I just got bold and took a razor and I cut the thread off and out popped the hackle. And I can remember that as clear today as when it happened. And I thought, wow, I got to learn how to do that. And so that was my first encounter with fly fishing. And another uncle who came to visit said, I'll buy you anything you want. And I remember walking home from school and go by Spencer Sporting Good in Englewood, Colorado. And I look in that window and I see this fly tying kit and I'm going, wow, that looks like that Royal Coachman fly. Oh, man, wouldn't it be cool to have that? And so when he came to visit and says, I'll buy anything you want, I said, I want a fly tying kit. And it all started right there. I started tying flies, well, what I thought were flies. I didn't really know what I was doing.
Basically teaching yourself, though?
Yeah, I did, because I didn't know anybody who was a fly fisherman or or anything. I remember some guys talking at my dad's restaurant. My folks had an Italian restaurant. Go figure, Japanese and Italian restaurant, you know. But, you know, I tell people I thought I was Italian until I was 15 years old. But they would talk about going over to and fishing the Gunnison River. I remember that. And they talked about salmon flies, and I had no idea what those were, but that they caught big fish. But, you know, I was just thirsty, and I would try to go to the library and check out books. And I'd check out books on fishing, and I tried to read them, and I had no idea what they were talking about. So, you know, I had to learn by myself. So I just looked at some of the pictures and tried to replicate what I saw in the pictures. And my first attempts at flies were just horrendous. And I tell my students who are beginning fly tiers to keep the first flies. Don't fish them. Just keep them, because if you will practice and you are faithful to tying them and practicing, you will become a better tire in a relatively short amount of time. But if you don't tie, then you'll never get good or master it. But it's so fun to look at those very, very first attempts, those coot attempts at the flies.
Yeah.
Certainly mine were bad.
I bet, yeah. So when did art enter your life?
Well, you know, art has always been part of my clan. The Takahashi clan on my dad's side of the family is very artistic. My daughter Haley is very artistic. She's majoring in art at CU. In fact, she's graduating this year, and she's doing really well. My son Josh was a graphic designer, a very, very accomplished artist, much better than I was. And it's always been in my blood to be an artist. You know, I couldn't read too well, but I could draw. And I had an uncle who was train at the Chicago Institute of Art, come and visit, and he was on leave too from the service. My family had served the United States for a long, long time, and he came to visit, and he taught me how to draw a saber, an F-86 saber jet. He taught me how to draw a tank and a hot rod, and so I used to practice that all the time, And I really loved drawing. So anytime I was sick or anything, I'd ask my mom if I had to stay home, could you just give me a drawing pad and a pencil? I'll just sit and draw while I'm in misery in my bed. So art's been a part of me. It's part of my clan's heritage. So,
What did you consciously combine fly tying with your art, or did that just kind of happen naturally?
Well, you know, I think that kind of happened just as a byproduct, because I was so interested in the colors. I remember when I was a little kid, I'd get comic books, and I loved looking at the comics. I didn't necessarily was interested in reading them, but just looking at the drawings and the colors and all of that. And so when I looked at that first fly, the reason I picked the Royal Coachman is because it was so colorful. I'd never seen anything like that before, and I thought, this is beautiful. This is beautiful. This is a work of art. In my very early mind, I thought that was a piece of artwork, and it stayed with me all these years. So, yeah, so I think it was just a natural evolving of art, putting art and my bent on art into my fly tying.
Can you talk about, in your book, you mentioned, and I may not pronounce this right, so correct me if I'm wrong, but Shibui and Bauhaus design. Can you talk about how affected your fly tying?
Well, you know, I've always enjoyed looking at some of the Japanese art and seeing some of the landscape and, you know, the Ikebana, the flower arrangement. And, you know, looking at that garden that's raked, you know, the sand's raked and very minimal objects in there, very elegant looking. And so I started just kind of naturally when I was tying was to try to make my flies sparse. And where the Baja comes into effect, well, I used to have a professor in art who used to talk about the Bauhaus approach of form following function. And so that made a lot of sense to me. So that's what I try to incorporate in my flies, not to overdo the flies, but to do the flies, I guess, just enough that I thought that they might work. And so I kind of evolved a style of tying there that is very simplistic. And Shibui means simple elegance. And that kind of sums up my approach to my art and to my actually to my fly tying also.
And what so, prompts you I, to go
ahead.
Ahead? I'm sorry. I was going to say,
no,
what prompts you to come up with a new design for a fly?
Well, you know what? I think it's that creative energy that I have. Is that I'm always wondering, what if? What if I were to try this? What if I were to try that? And that's probably, or I'll look for, I'll see a certain type of material. And it doesn't necessarily have to be fly tie material. You know, I frequent the hardware stores, you know, Hobby Lobby, Michaels, you know, the grocery store, you know, and I'll look at, you know, the packaging and just anything. I'm wondering if I could take that Cheetos bag, and if I ate the Cheetos and then I noticed the inside of it, it's silvery. What if I wash that and then I cut it in strips and I use it for ribbing on a chironomid, say, for instance? You know, I would try those things. And so, you know, I'm always trying. I wonder if I could do this. I wonder if I could do that. And that led to me experimenting on a lot of the patterns and then going out and seeing if I can catch a fish with it, you know.
Yeah.
And so I you know, that's what prompts a lot of my design. It's what if. And I consider my flies to be impressionistic and not necessarily realistic. I'm just trying to give the impression of what of life and what the insect is. And so so when I'm tying flies, I don't try to make it look exactly like the insect, but just close enough or create some movement. And a lot of my patterns are kind of attractor type of patterns that might grab the attention of the fish. So. You know, there's a lot of those factors that go into the design process, but a lot of it is my thinking first. What if I did this? And that's what prompts me a lot. Yes.
We have. I want to get into some of your specific patterns and kind of dig deep into
sure.
those. But there were a bunch of questions that came in that were kind of general, and so I thought we'd knock those off first and get those answered for the folks out there. Doug McLean up in Calgary, Alberta, wrote in and asked, do you have a favorite fly tying vice or vices, and what do you like about them?
Well, yeah, I do. I like collecting vices, and whenever I could afford it, and I guess being in the fly fishing industry, I was able to have the opportunity to purchase some of the various types of vices, and so I've collected some pretty, I think, pretty cool vices. I try to rotate through all my vices. I've probably collected maybe over a dozen vices, but the vices that I consistently tie with are one is the Law vice, which is a vice that was made over in England, and it's a really beautiful piece of design. I don't take it out fishing because it's worth a lot of money these days. I saw one that sold for, I think it was $5,000. So I don't want to take that vice out because, you know, I have to go to the bathroom frequently when I'm tying flies, and someone nabbed that vice while I'm going to the bathroom. So I don't take that one out, but I did some work with, I got to do some, collaboration with CNF, you know, the design company in Japan, and they design a lot of fly fishing and fly tying materials and tools. And I like tying on their reference vise. At home, I tie a lot on a Renzetti Masters vise that a friend of mine gave me, or we traded some artwork for it. I'm on the Force of fly fishing pro staff, and I tie on a Force Predator, and I don't know if you've seen it, Roger, but at first, when I first saw the thing, my friend Kevin Evans said, hey, Rick, I designed this vise, I want you to tie with it, and I thought it looked like a car jack, and I thought, oh, man, I'm not going to like tying on this, and he said, well, just try it out, and I did it while I was at the Denver Fly Fishing Show, and the first fly I tied on, I'm going, wow, this is pretty nice. It's like tying on a lot of ice. And then the second fly I tied was a size 24 midge, and it held the hook well, and it was really easy to tie with. And I thought, you know, this isn't bad. And so I've been doing a lot of demonstration tying with that vice. I like Regal vices. Peak vices is a great vice, you know, for the for the beginning all the way to the advanced fly tire. And then my friend Don Johnson, who was my mentor, gave me a Xeron vise that the Deddies, the Catskill fly tires that the Deddies tied on. And so I don't tie with that. I just have it in my collection. But I like to tie with all those vises, and I rotate through them all the time. So it's fun.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Doug also asked, are there some tools that you really find helpful in tying flies? I think maybe out of the ordinary ones, you know, that we all use. But is there something, any special tools you use?
Oh, yeah, there are a few things. You know, I like, CNF Design, they sent me some of their tools to tie with, and they're really engineered well. And you might even say they're over-engineered, but they're designed very well. So I like to use a lot of their tools, their dubbing brush, their bodkin. You know, I think Stoneflow has a half-hitch tool that has a little black handle on it with three different sizes of half-hitch tool. I like using that. I think that I like using the CNF bobbins for fly tying. And I try to have, and this is nuts, this drives me nuts sometimes, but I want to have a bobbin for every color thread that I have, every size thread that I have. And I found out the hard way that, you know, you try to get a fairly decent quality bobbin, because I got some fairly cheap ones, and all they did is cut my thread, so I don't use that. I use that just for wire. My friend Dennis Collier has a little brush that he brushes out a lot of his flies with, a little dubbing brush, and I think you can get those at Charlie's Fly Box, and I really like that to tie with. Then my niece gave me a cuticle cutter. It's a Tweezerman cuticle cutters that I like to use, and I can get really precise in my cutting. So with really small flies like midges or small dries and stuff like that, I like cutting with that. Razor scissors I think are excellent when you're getting into tight places. You just got to be real careful not to stick yourself. I was doing a demo where I stuck my thumb, and it was like Dan Aykroyd doing that Julia Child thing on Saturday Night Live, and it's just spurting blood, and I had to go get a Band-Aid and things like that. But those tools are really fine, and I've been using even just some common things like a Bic Classic pen that I use for tying my bullet head hoppers. I take the ink out of it, and I use that as a little tool to compress my deer hair when I'm doing, you know, bullet head hoppers. And then I like using just the SolarEdge UV lights that come with their resins. And so, those are some of the tools that I use. But every time I go into a place, I'm always looking at tools and wondering, oh, how do you use that? You know, and so, you know, I'm pretty inquisitive that way. And so sometimes I'll buy some tools, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't for my style of time. But those are the things that I use a lot. Yeah.
So you like shiny objects, huh, Rick?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? My wife and I moved into our new house, and we got a ranch-style house so that I wouldn't have to climb so many stairs, because I'm getting to be kind of an old guy now. But I asked her if we couldn't build, you know, do our basement right away, because I'm, you know, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be on this earth. I was giving her that kind of spiel, and so she let me do the basement, and she let me do a really nice fly tying room. And so, you know, I've got it made right here. But one of the things that I noticed is that I think I have an addiction, and it's to buying fly tying materials and tools and all this stuff. I go home and I got 10 packages of the same thing. So yeah, I just love it all. Anything shiny gets my, talk me into buying anything. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we need to take a quick break here, Rick, but when we come back, we'll talk more about the art of fly tying. So hang with me, and
we'll
be right back.
I sure will.
Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly and Kodiak rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world for over 15 years, including Dave Whitlock, one of fly fishing's greatest innovators. Dave said, "With my Watermaster, I can enjoy more fishing per hour than any other method I have ever tried. After 2.5 years of testing 15 models of kick boats, I'm convinced that the Watermaster is the ultimate personal flotation craft for warm and cold water fly fishing." Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. Again, that's BigSkyInflatables.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Rick Takahashi about the art of fly tying. If you'd like to ask Rick a question, just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately. We'll try to answer as many of them on the show as possible tonight. So, Rick, I always ask, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? I know you were just at the Denver Fly Fishing Show doing the tying demonstrations there. What's next on your calendar?
Well, we did the ISE show, the West Denver Trout Unlimited Fly Tying Clinic is coming up, which they often invite about 60 fly tiers, and the public is invited to come in, and you can sit down and watch these wonderful tiers and talk to them and get some insights and watch how they tie flies. I do a number of fly tying demonstrations at the various fly shops along the Front Range here. I'll be going up to Mountain Home, Arkansas to do the sow bug roundup. It'll be the first time I've ever tied there. They asked me if I'd be one of the featured tiers there. My friend Dave Mosick, one of my fishing partners, and I are going to be going up to Wasatch Expo in Salt Lake City. I think it's in April sometime. And then we have various fly tying TU clinics going on. I'm going to be at the St. Vrain doing a tying demo there. I'll be at the Northern Colorado Fly Fishers tying clinic and going to various schools and doing some presentations there on fly fishing. And so I've been kept pretty busy, and so it's really great. I just really enjoy sharing what I've learned about fly fishing with others.
Good. Sounds like you'll have a busy year coming up.
I do all this stuff because if I don't, you know, my wife has this list too of things she wants me to do. I can't do this. I got to go do a presentation. So
that's right. Yeah, and then you have to prepare for 3 weeks before that to make sure you got it right. Right?
Absolutely.
Do some testing on the water, and I know.
Absolutely.
How it is.
Yes.
Well, we got a question. Question from Dick in Northbrook, Illinois. He said he would like to learn how you assemble and organize materials in preparation for tying a commercial order. In addition, do you strip the hackles from a neck or saddle and sort them by size, color, et cetera? And how do you store these hackles if you do that? So,
an excellent question. I am not a commercial tire. If I had to rely on being a commercial tire, I would starve because I'm not the fastest tire. But I am a fly designer, and I'm a fly designer for Umpqua Feather Merchants. And so if I come up with a design that they like, I can submit it to them. And if they like it and they produce it, then they have to tie it. I don't have to worry about tying it. But I do a lot of demonstration, and I think being a teacher has prepared me to be able to present a skill rather quickly. And what I do is that I organize all of my fly tying patterns that I'm going to be tying. I found that I went and bought a Derice, I think is the name of the company, but it's in the scrapbooking section of like Hobby Lobby and Joann's and Michael's. And within that box, it's a plastic box, and it has 16 other smaller containers in it. And so what I do is that when I'm doing a tying demonstration, and I've taught this to a lot of my friends who are demonstration fly tiers, and it just helps them to present in a quicker method. Because when I was teaching, if I wasn't prepared and didn't move smoothly, I'd look up and half my students were falling asleep. So I learned to be, you know, to be well prepared. And what I do is in each individual box, if I'm tying a pattern, I'll have all the materials, so the hooks, the bobbin with the right color thread, and all the materials right there. So when I present it, I am not looking through my bags looking for dubbing or looking for some other piece of material. I have it right there, and I have found that that box is excellent for me to store some of my fly tying materials, and I can just mark on the outside, label it what's there, you know, like a D-rib or what have you, and have it all categorized like that. So that's what I do to organize myself, because I'm a right-brain person, and a right-brain person, it takes me just 5 minutes to make the place look like a mess, because I have everything strewn all over the place. So this helps for me to organize myself. And then the second question that he had was on hackle. One of the things that I do with hackle is that I am on the pro staff of Whiting Farms, and I'm so happy to represent them, because they are the best producers of hackle in the world, period. And Dr. Tom Whiting there is a master geneticist on poultry, and the feathers that he's created, to give you an instance, one of the feathers I like to tie with is a Whiting Farms mid-saddle hackle. And I never thought in my lifetime that I would be tying a dry fly, a small dry fly, say like a 24-size dry fly, using the saddle hackle. But he has developed some roosters there that have real long hackles with real fine barbules and short barbules and real fine stems that make it very, very easy to tie these small flies. And a lot of times what I'll do is I'll just pluck out a few feathers from my saddle neck and put everything away, and then take those few feathers to my tying bench, and that's what I'll tie with. And I'll initially strip the base follicle off the ricus or the stem of the fly, but every time I tie it, all I do is just cut it off, and then I can tie about maybe a dozen flies out of one hackle.
It's
just amazing how long it is. And I don't even have to use a hackle pliers these days. I can just hold it with my fingers. They're so long, and they're just beautiful to tie with. They're well worth the price that you have to pay for them. I can't say enough about the quality of the feathers, and I just really like tying with their product. And I'm not trying to, you know, necessarily push all these products, but you know, I found that if you tie with quality materials, you'll more than likely end up with a quality fly.
We had a couple of questions come in here on the internet, so I'll throw these out to you. Florian in Quebec, Canada. Wrote, he says, hi, for trout flies, do you mainly use finer threads, 14 or 16-aught, or the more classic 8 uni-type thread? If using all sizes and brands, please explain how you choose which you use when.
I think that's an excellent question. I use all those threads, to be honest with you. And I use them for various things. When I'm tying some real small flies and I are doing some presentation flies, you know, I have found that Vivas, like 16-aught, I can tie some really small midges with it. I can tie some really delicate dry flies or nymphs with that thread, and there's not much of a thread buildup, and the thread is extremely strong. And I've also found, like, Semperfly, a nano thread I particularly like to tie with. It is very strong and very narrow. And a lot of times, instead of putting dubbing on some of the bodies, I'll just color the thread with a marker and then coat it with, like, Solarez Bone Dry UV resin, which is really, really, really thin, or I might use some instant glue on the body to protect the thread. And so some of those real delicate flies are, if I'm trying to tie like a Catskill style fly that's really sparse, I like to use some of those threads that don't have much of a buildup. I like to use UTC for a lot of my chironomids. I have kind of rough hands from when I was teaching as a pottery teacher, and I just, my hands are just naturally dry, so I have to be a little bit more careful with the UTC thread. But it comes in some beautiful colors, and it's not a corded thread like say Vivas's or Uni is. It's more like a floss, a multi-strand. So You can unwind or tighten up the weave of the thread for whatever you need. And if you want to have a real smooth body, you just unwind it by going counterclockwise. And then when you wrap the body, it can be really smooth. So I use all the Danvil. I use Danvil. If I'm tying some bigger flies, I use a 140 denier or some of the heavier Danvil types of thread. So I use all the different types of threads. I mean, if you were in my studio right now, I'm looking at them. I must have 40 different types of thread, on my fly tying bench over there, mm-hmm. and spread around the room that, if I need this color, then I can go over and get it, And so I like to use all of them. I just really get a big thrill on them. But I think the ones I've been concentrating with now, I'm tying small flies, so I've been using a lot of the Vivus and Semperfly nano threads a lot for my small dry flies and nymphs.
Mm-hmm. We had another question come in on the Internet. Phil McCartney asks, do you use ball-bearing dubbing twisters?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I've got about three or four different ones that I use. And some of the fly patterns that I tie, like, say, for instance, I have a little Betis pattern it's in the book. It's a micro beadhead Betis. And what I'll do is I'll use the dubbing maker, the ball-bearing ones, and I'll put a little bit of like rabbit or some type of fur in there or some type of synthetic material, and then spin it around, make a little bit of a dubbing brush, and use that in lieu of, say, like a hen hackle for the legs for like a soft hackle. And so I use those all the time, and I like the ball-bearing ones because I'm kind of a lazy guy, and if I have to sit there and twist the other ones, sometimes I don't do as good a job. So those ball-bearing dubbing twisters really work well. I really like using those, yes.
Good. Waite in Redding, California asks, when tying a new fly pattern, do you dip the first fly in water to check to see if you are pleased with the color before continuing tying? And I suppose you could ask, do you dip it in water to see how it performs as well? Is that part of your process?
Well, yeah, it certainly is, but it's not a major component of the process. I guess the way that I would like to answer this is that, let's see, I have a pretty good understanding of the properties of the threads that I'm using because I've been, tying for 65 mm-hmm. years. You learn something, and so I can anticipate some of the color changes that might happen with the thread when you get it wet or when you add, like, say, the UV resin or a head cement or whatever coating on it, it usually turns darker. But, I kind of believe one thing that I learned from Gary Borger is the size, shape, and color, And so I'm not sure that the fish can discern that infinitely in the different shades of color. So if I'm tying a Betis color, I'll generally stick in the olive colors, and I have three or four colors that I like to tie with. But I don't believe that the fish are that discerning, And if they are, then I guess I got to go back and do something different. But but I generally look at the size, shape, and color, and the color being the least important, but certainly important. But, for Betis on the Big Thompson River I was fishing, I used three or four different Betis patterns, dries, and they, one was a tan, one was a little darker brown, one was an olive brown, one was an olive, and they all caught fish. So, I think if you can get the right size, shape, and then the color, you're well on your way to catching fish.
Yeah. Yeah. One last question before we jump into the Betis, because I have some questions about those particularly. But Tim in Salem, Oregon asks, he says, I'm trying to keep my fishing as simple as possible at the same time as I wish to be successful. How many different patterns do you carry when fishing? So how do you organize your boxes, and what do you take with you?
Well, that's an excellent question because I've always had this notion that I got to carry 10,000 boxes on me, and so I, you know, my fishing vest or my sling pack or whatever is loaded with fly boxes. I can barely walk because it's so heavy. But it's just my psychological need to have all of these fly boxes and things out like that. And I've got a couple of friends who've said, you know, you got to downsize a little bit. Well, my buddy Bubba Smith, who up on the San Juan River and up in New Mexico, he says, you know, why do you have all those patterns to fish with? My fishing partner, Dave Mosnick, is saying, you know, Rick, you ought to just carry one box with what flies you think you're going to need. And I'll be honest with you, when I go out there, I probably only use three or four flies. And so why do I need to have all these boxes? But really, what I try to do is anticipate where I'm going. I have a general knowledge of what the entomology was going to be for that area. So I will try to have boxes, just carry a few boxes that have those type of patterns and various styles of tie and various sizes. And so I'm really trying to downsize because, you know, getting to be an old guy now, it's hard to carry, you know, all those 40 boxes around with me. And, and I'm so short that they get wet in the bottom, and so then I got to dry them all out. So, yeah, I'm trying to really downsize. That makes a really big difference. And so now, you know, I have a large CNF box, you know, with a spring leaf in it, and I can carry almost every type of insect that's in that piece of watershed that I'm fishing.
Yeah.
And I could just pick out from there and go fish with that. So,
Cliff,
so I'm really.
Cliff Outdoors makes a fly box he calls a day's worth. And, that makes you think, should you just carry a day's worth of flies? And that will teach you to understand the water better. In other words, what are you carrying grasshoppers for when it's February, you know? It's like, but it makes you think about that. And I met a guy in a parking lot up here in near Bailey, Colorado, last year, and he saw him. I had a pretty hefty vest on, too, and he says, yeah, I don't carry much. He says, here's what I carry, and he opened this box. He had about 20 flies in this little tiny box, and that was it.
Yeah.
He says, this is all I bring up, and I always catch fish. And so that kind of tells you, going back to Gary Borger, right size, right color, in the right place, and you'll probably do pretty well. So there may be something to that, you know.
Oh, well, there certainly is. You know, I asked my friend Bubba one time. We were following San Juan. You know, I'm asking about patterns, and he looks at me and goes, "Talk." Or he calls me "Oh, Wonderful One" or something like that. He's always got these names for me. But he's a great fisherman. I've learned so much from him. But he says, you know, Rick, it's really not the arrow, it's the Indian.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Meaning that, you know, you've got to make sure that you know, a fly pattern is certainly important, but, you know, your presentation technique is really important, and you have to be able to present that fly well in a dead drift at most part, you know, you got to do it well. And he's taught me a lot. He's taught me to be a better fisherman. And so that's one thing I'm always telling people, you know, Bubba said, you know, it's not the arrow, it's the Indian. So, I think that's really important. I had somebody ask me, what's more important, the pattern or the presentation? I said, you know, they're both equally important.
Rick, we need to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some betas and how you tie those and your insights on that. Looking for that shot at a permit? Whippray Key Fishing Lodge in Belize is where you want to be. When you stay at Whippray Key Fishing Lodge, you're on a private island and are only minutes away from some of the finest permit fishing in Belize. Whippray Key is just a 30-minute boat ride from Placentia. Once you're there, you'll be fishing Permit Alley, one of Belize's best fisheries, and you won't be taking long boat rides to get started. You'll fish with world-class guides like Daniel Cabral, whose family has fished the area for over 30 years. Want to switch it up and fish for tarpon and bonefish and make it a grand slam? They can make it happen at Whippray Key Fishing Lodge. Book your next adventure now. Visit WhipprayKeyFishingLodge.com. That's Whippray, C-A-Y-E, FishingLodge.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Rick Takahashi about the art of fly tying. If you'd like to ask Rick a question, go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. So, Rick, talking about betas, and I, you know, in your latest book, The Fly Tying Artist, you've got this broken down into a lot of different sections, way more than we could ever think about covering tonight. But I wanted to kind of hit some of the high points, flies that we all use. And betas, of course, is, you know, like top of the list for a lot of our fishing. When you're tying the betas patterns, tell us a bit about the materials that you use and why. Like, you know, what do you use for the abdomen? What do you use for wing cases, thorax, legs, thread, you know, hooks? And tell us what your preferences are and why.
Well, that's a great question. I'll break it down into subsurface, the nymphs, and then into dries. One of the things that I've noticed about betas nymphs is, and collecting them, is that they're very slender in profile. So I try to mimic that. If I'm using dubbing, I like to use really, really fine dubbing, like a super fine dubbing, and just pull out just a very few of the fibers and put them on the thread. And I try to be conscious of what thread I'm using. So a lot of betas are olive, so I'll use an olive color thread as a base. Then take out some olive super fine dubbing and just dub a few of those fibers on there to make it really, really slender. I like using that for the body. I like using stripped peacock hurl. Nature Spirit has some dyed peacock that the dye remains constant throughout the whole feather. And so I can just take off one of the hurls and I can strip it with an eraser and get this really nice stripped quill, and I like to do the bodies of some of the nymphs with that. It gives a real nice segmentation. Sometimes I'll just use my tying thread and do the underbody and wrap it back three or four times till I think it's the perfect diameter for the betas. And then sometimes I'll just coat the body with say like a super glue or the Solarez bone dry, but very, very, very light. Sometimes I add the bone dry and then touch it with my finger so it takes some of the bone dry off and then hit it with the light. For tailing materials, I like to use Antron for the shuck and just use a very few of the fibers and cut them to the proper length. I think some of the commercial tied flies I've seen, I think they put their shucks are too heavy, so I try to make them really, really fine and chitinous in appearance. I also have found some paintbrush, some tapered paintbrush that I bought, and I'll sometimes use that for the tailing on my nymphs. For the thoraxes, I like to use various types of dubbing material, sometimes a little bit thicker, and if I'm going to do an attractor type of pattern, I like to use some of the Euro dubbings that are like ice dub, you know, that are real sparkly, use that. Some of the natural furs like muskrat I use for a lot of my betas, thoraxes, and of course sometimes the peacock curl itself. Legs, I use all kinds of things. I use CDC, I use hare's ear dubbing or some type of fur dubbing in a dubbing loop and tie those on. Antron, Zelon, a fluoro fiber I like to use. And a lot of times with those flies, the small betas nymphs and things, I'm tying again with Aviva 69 Semperfly Nano. The hooks, I favor using Daiichi hooks and Tiemco hooks for most of my tying needs. For dry flies, for winging material, I like to use a lot of yarn, some polyester yarn or some Antron yarn or sometimes some dubbing or MFC makes a widow's web that I like to use, and it's real crinkly. It traps air really well for the wings, and then certainly sometimes I use some fine deer hair. I will use hen feathers sometimes for the wings. I would tie with a duck a little bit more, but I'm not as good as tying with duck. Like a good friend of mine, Scott Stitzer, ties a no hackle that he uses either blue wing teal or melon, and he ties these beautiful wings on his no hackles, and I can't tie that. So I always ask him if he'll tie them for me, because he makes it look so easy. And then I'm sitting there cussing at the fly and breaking the hook off and yelling at it because I can't tie like he does. But then I still use those paintbrush fibers, you know, for the tails, and a lot of the quills, biots, and for the abdomen. And then usually superfine dubbing, you know, for the thorax. And then, of course, Whiting Farms saddle hackles. And since a lot of the flies I'm tying are smaller, I really prefer tying with the midge saddle hackles. I think they work really well. So that's kind of in a nutshell what I do with some of the
Yeah, a lot of different materials. There were a couple questions since you brought it up. Dale Yamamoto in Chicago, he says, an intriguing collection of flies that you've created are the various paintbrush fly patterns. So he wants to know what kind of paintbrush bristles are you using?
That's a great, hey, thank you for that question. Was in the store buying a paintbrush I had to paint a room for my wife, and so I went to the store and I'm looking at the different brushes and taking them out, and I noticed one that was a polyester paintbrush fiber that had fuzzy ends on it, and I said, ooh, I wonder if I could use that for tying as a quill body or, you know, a segmented body, and so I ponied up and bought the paintbrush and took it home, and I tried tying with it, and I really liked the effect that it got. And so I started tying up a few patterns and then taking them out and fish, you know, like on the San Juan River, you know, the Poudre, the South Platte, you know, some of those waters, and did really well with them. And so I developed a few patterns using that paintbrush fiber. Like I have a paintbrush emerger and some dries. And I wrote about it in Fly Fisherman magazine because, you know, I like to share that stuff. I don't like to think that there's any secrets. I like to share that with people. And so I really like those polyester paintbrush fibers. So if he wants any, he ought to get a hold of me because I bought so many of those that I have like 10 lifetime supplies of it. I'd certainly want to get rid of some of it. So,
I think you need a chaperone when you go out shopping, you know?
Yes. I really do. I really do.
I can't imagine what you've got over there in your basement. Anyway, we won't go there.
When you come up to
the wife might
sometime.
Be listening. So, yeah.
No, she's a teacher, and she's a hard worker. She's at meetings tonight, and so
she works
very hard. So,
okay.
Yeah,
we are
recording
this, though, Rick. You know, so.
Oh, you are, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to get her. She could retire this year, but I'm trying to get her to go for about 7 more years, so I have some more time to fish. So,
What are some of the most successful baitist patterns that you've created and tied, you know, that fish really well, both nymphs and duns?
Well, you know, I think the ones that I found to be successful have been the ones that using just the materials that we were talking about, you know, stripped peacock, you know, that Nature Spirit. Stripped peacock hurl. They have about maybe 15 different colors of peacock, and it's not just the traditional green color. I mean, they have pink, blueing olive, mahogany, red, purple, all these different colors. And when you strip it down, you know, either with your fingernail or you're using a razor, it makes beautiful stripped bodies. The tying thread, I use that a lot. And another thing I do with the tying thread, I'll wrap the tying thread down to the bend of the hook, and then I'll take a dark marker and color it, and then spin the bobbin to tighten up the cording of the thread, and then I'll wrap it forward as ribbing. And so I don't have to add anything else, and then I put a little dab of either super glue or the bone dry UV on there, and makes great bodies. So, you know, with just using those types of materials, I did a demonstration for a friend of mine, Cindy, at the ISC, where I said, I'm going to take these you know, common materials here, and I'm going to tie, in the Betis family, I'm going to tie all these different patterns using the same materials, but just in a different configuration for each one of them. And it, those have been really, really successful to me. So those are the ones I have a tendency to pick when I go fishing.
Yeah, this I'm looking in your book now. What I was trying to get you to say is, you know, some of the names of the flies that you've designed. And I'm looking at this stripped quill Betis nymph. So this kind of describes what you just talked about. Tail,
right.
Tapered paintbrush fibers, stripped peacock
right.
Pearl for a rib, superfine olive dubbing for the thorax. Yeah, I mean, that kind
yes.
of pulls it all together into that one fly, right?
Right, yes. And then, you know, from just that one fly, you can tie, you know, that addition of hackle, you could, and some wing material, you can tie a whole series of different types of betas,
you know,
with that.
Yeah.
Some real small ones to represent the pseudo-cloon to, you know, a little larger betas. But, I think that there's a lot of different things that you can do. And since I wrote that book, you know, which I started 3 years ago, I've come up with a lot more patterns because it's that artist in me. Oh, what if I do this? And
yeah.
So I've even come up with some more patterns, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Al in Atlanta, Georgia wants to know, what wing material do you recommend for small 20, 26 no-hackle dry flies? And what hackle for small wet flies as well?
I like, for no hackle, you know, it's traditionally has been tied with a quill wing, but one of the styles of flies that I have that don't require a hackle is a Comparadon. Swisher Richards, a Comparadon, is one of my favorite flies to tie in. It has a deer hair wing that's tied on in 180 degrees. It has a body that you can use any type of body, including the thread and the quills and things that we've been talking about. Some of the flies are tied with a little bit of antron out the back as a shuck, so it's kind of like a partially emerged mayfly, or you can use those taper paintbrush fibers that we were talking about. And what I like about that pattern is that if you have a box of superfine dubbing, that they're number one selection. Some hooks, and I like to tie my flies on, especially on that Daiichi 12-20, 12-22 hook, which has a little bend in it, and it gives it the right, I think, the right bend for the wings, and a couple of colored deer hairs. You could mimic any type of mayfly here in, you know, in North America, I believe, and possibly the world. I don't know if you had enough big size hooks all the way down to real small stuff. So I like the Comparadon style. I think tying with some of the CDC and creating the wings with the CDC and not using a hackle for that. CDC floats just wonderfully, and I like tying some of those patterns. I would suggest if you're fishing with CDC or any of the dry flies to purchase some Amadou, which is a tree fungus, and it really wicks moisture off a dry fly. So if it gets wet and soggy, that you could put the fly in the Amadou and squeeze out the water. And then I like to use Shimazaki dry shake to refloat the fly. And, you know, you can fish a waterlogged fly for a long time if you could just keep redressing it like that. But when it comes to the pure no-hackle, like Swisher Richards no-hackle, green wing teal, blue wing teal, and mallard, and I don't even tie those. I just asked my friend Scott Stitzer, would you please tie me some? so he's a good guy, and he will tie me some. And I've gone to his house to learn how to do this. I've bought his videos, and I still can't tie it. I am just not very gifted with that fly.
Oh, that's funny. Bob Garman in Philadelphia, he says, I'm looking forward to using your Tox Emerger pattern this spring. What made you decide to use the looped wing? And should I be tying more patterns with a looped wing?
I would say loop wing flies work really well, and you can use, in my emerger that my paintbrush emerger, I use polyester, but you could use antron. You could probably use some Zeolon. And if you can get the CDC to bend correctly, so I just think that the loop wing gives the appearance of an emerging wing. And so that's why I put it on there. And I use the ends of the polyester yarn instead of clipping them off, I bent them back and tied over for to create a little larger head, like a lot of betas, you know, mayflies, the head's a little bit larger anyway, so I just wrapped it a little bit thicker, and using that Viva 16-knot thread, you can tie some pretty nice, you know, smaller heads with that, and then I just colored the yarn on the side with an olive marker and then cut it short, and I put some CDC in there, and I think it just traps air well, too, especially if you gink it up a little bit, and one of the ways to fish that fly is not necessarily in the surface film, but pull it underneath. You know, I've caught fish when I put it all the way to the bottom, then let it ascend up to the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why I like the loop wing.
I've got another question here. I kind of asked this before, yeah, but you didn't give me a straight answer, so I'll let somebody else ask it. Roger Campbell in Cheyenne, Wyoming, wrote in, and he says, your book contains over 20 patterns for the Betis nymph. What Betis patterns are your favorites?
Oh, man. Okay, I should get my book out here. Oh, I don't even have one in front of me here. You know, I was so nervous about doing this, I didn't bring one down. Would you please tell them that every single one of those are my favorite? You know, whatever I have in my box, I'll take it out and fish it. You know, and I've had luck with those. All those flies that I have in the book, I have caught fish. I didn't put anything in there that hadn't caught a fish. So,
Roger Campbell,
I really have faith in
those. Based upon Rick's description of his fly fishing vest, if you tie every fly in his book, you'll be well prepared and just carry all of them all the time. And then you can't miss.
Yes. That's pretty good, yes.
Yeah. So let's talk about caddis. I noticed that in your book, you've come up with your own caddis patterns based on some you know, time honored standbys. Tell us about your bread crust wannabe and how it came about and the materials you used for that particular fly.
Oh yeah, excellent question. Well, my friend Pat Dorsey, who took over Ed Rocha, who was the originator of the bread crust, and he would take that rough grouse. I think it was a brown phase rough grouse. He'd take the tail, and then he'd split the tail, and then take all the pith out of the center of the stem, and then he'd cut all of the fibers off real close, so that when you bent that little stem there, it would create those little spiked portions of the body. Wow. That thing takes so long to try to tie. That's another one I would just call Blue Quill and orders and buy some of those, because it takes so long to tie them. But I wanted to come up with a little faster version. And so what I did is just take some, a D-rib and use it for the main body. And then to create that little spiky effect, I use a hackle and wrapped it in between the D-rib and then cut it short. And then put a Whiting Farms grizzly hand saddle on the front, and then just tie it off the head. And so I wanted to come up with something, because that is such an excellent pattern and really represents the case caddis very well. So that's how I came up with that pattern.
Go ahead.
I was just saying that I think Pat Dorsey ties a fly very, very similar to that, too. So I don't know how he, being a commercial tire, and he had to tie those flies, because it would take me 2 hours to get everything prepared to tie just one fly. So, you know, got to be a little excessive for me. So,
and yeah. What about your fly, split wing caddis? How did that come about?
My split wing caddis, that's another variation of one of my favorite fly tires. Craig Matthews out of Blue Ribbon Fly Shop. My friend, Tim England, who used to be the illustrator for Rod and Reel magazine, I don't know how many years, 30 years ago, wrote, illustrated an article on the, on Craig Matthews' X-wing caddis. And we went up and we fished, we were fishing on the Poudre River one evening. And I said, hey, I tied up about a half dozen of those flies that you illustrate. He goes, oh, let me see. And I brought him over. And I tied it on a hook that that at the time was very brittle, and a lot of the points would break off. And so I tied six and tried to take them out of the box. And at the time it was that ripple foam, and the barb was on there, you know, to hold the fly in. It broke the tip off, and so we only had two flies that were left, and I gave him one, and I kept one. And so as we were fishing, we hit one of those caddis hatches, and it was just unbelievable at dusk. And I just had the one fly, and I noticed what was happening is that every fish I caught, some of the deer hair would come out until, you know, and I had to redress the fly every single time I caught a fish. And at the end, there was only three or four fibers on each side of deer hair, and the fly was still catching fish, and I was, you know, putting it in shimazaki and refloating it and catching fish until it got dark. And I had epiphany, and that epiphany was that when I tie this fly the next time, I'm just going to go ahead and cut out the center section of the deer hair to create that delta wing instead of waiting for the fish to do that. And if fish is really flushing the surface film, and so that's how I came up with that pattern. And you know, I call it my split wing because it, you know, it has that split wing, but it's really Craig Matthews' X-wing caddis. And and again, he's one of my favorite tires. I just love those patterns. So.
We got a question from Mark Altman in Greenwood Village, Colorado. He says, Rick, I'm thinking about trying the check nipping technique, since so many people who learn that skill seem to have good success with it. But the Czech style nymphs seem to have no resemblance to the patterns we traditionally fish here in Colorado. What's your experience with these big weighted bugs?
I love fishing European style Czech nymphing and stuff, because what it reminds me of is when I was a kid growing up, and I was, you know, fishing for trout, and you know, we put a worm on or salmon eggs, and I even used to use corn, you know, and we'd chuck it out there, and we'd keep the rod tip high and just work it through the run and see if we could feel the fish take it. Well, that's very similar to, you know, this high-sticking, straight-line nymphing, and the Europeans have you know, improved it by incorporating a cider, so it's a little bit easier to see your line, and but you're still bouncing along the bottom and catching fish. And yeah, the flies don't represent anything I've seen in the water, you know. But they're attractor patterns, and they are so fun to tie because it's something completely different than what I've been tying. You know, so for the past 3 years, I've been developing patterns. A friend of mine, Dave from Maine, got me into tying perdigons, which are a Spanish style nymph, and it's tied on a 60-degree jig hook with usually a tungsten, a slotted bead. But I'm so cheap, I just use a brass bead and add some lead to it and tie them. And they're designed to get down, you know, to the bottom fast. That's why they're using the tungsten. And I got to tell you, it's a very effective method of catching fish. I catch the real small ones all the way up to some fairly decent-sized fish with that. And like this spring, that's all I did was this Euro nymphing. And I didn't even have to get my waders on because I have was using a long rod. I've got a 10- or 11-foot rod. And I could just stand, you know, on the rocks and along the bank and just cast up and just high-stick it down and catching some pretty decent fish. So I really like the European style, and I'd highly recommend people, you know, go on the internet and look up, you know, French style nymphs, perdigon, or Spanish style nymphs. Lance Egan from Utah has a really great video on his style, and he shows, he shows how he rigs up his rigging, and it's, I think, a very effective way. And it's just like, you know, when I grew up fishing here and fishing up in Cheeseman Canyon, you know, high stick fishing, you know, real close to you. You know, you're not casting real far out there, and I think it's really fun. And anybody who hasn't tried it, you know, give it a shot. I think it's really an effective way to fish, and fun flies to tie. You can make up anything. I make it the most gaudiest things, and I catch fish with them, so it's fun. Yeah.
Get out the old Cheetos bag, huh?
Absolutely, yes, sirree. Yes,
you have
indeed.
A series in your book called the Go-To Series
right.
of flies. So Doug McLean up in Calgary asked, can you talk about the Go-To Series flies, how you develop them, and what the advantages of those flies are in terms of tying them and fishing them?
Okay. First of all, the Go-To Series are attractor-style patterns, and I had resisted fishing a prince nymph with a beadhead prince nymph because I used to say, well, what's that dang bead? What is it for? What is it doing? And what does a prince nymph represent? And I was real hoity-toity about it. And then a friend of mine says, well, have you ever fished one? I said, I ain't going to fish that. He says, you catching any fish? And I said, no. And he says, well, here, I'll give you one. And, oh, geez, I started catching fish. So it became one of my favorite patterns, the prince nymph. But unfortunately, I found that I was diagnosed with a ruptured disc at C3 and 4, which is high up in the neck here. And I had a bone spur pressing into my spinal column, and I was starting to become paralyzed from the chest down. You know, and being an art teacher, I couldn't draw, I couldn't paint, I couldn't do the potter's wheel and things like that. And so I had to get it operated on. But in the meantime, I was still tying. And so what I did is I came up with I wanted to tie the prince nymph, and so I just decided that I was a special ed teacher also, and I worked with handicapped kids, and I used to have to do adaptations to help them with their learning. And so I said, I'm just going to come up with an adaptation. So what I did is I, on the very first fly, I was sitting at my desk, instead of using brown biots for the tail, I took some Whiting Farm brown hand hackle. I like the conformation of that feather. I took off some of the fibers and tied it on, so that was to be for the tail. And then I tied in some pearl crystal flash for the rib instead of using the traditional, oval gold tinsel. And then I tied on the peacock curl, and I wrapped it to the halfway point and then ribbed it with the pearl tinsel. One thing that I had learned about midge fishing, and especially from fishing the San Juan, is there's a fly called the disco midge, and you tie it with pearl crystal flash or pearl flashaboo over a black body, and that pearl turns kind of a greenish color. And so I thought, ooh, that might be a real nice color combination for the body. And then I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, what else can I put on here? So I put on polyester yarn for the wing, and that replaced the two white biots that are on a prince nymph. And I tied it in the middle part of the fly. And then I took brown midge saddle hackle on my desk. And one of the things I had always had trouble with is tying that partridge on the front of the prince nymph. Well, I decided I'm going to tie it in a different location, and there was that brown saddle hackle, and it was very painful for me to get up and walk over and get the right feather. So I just took that brown saddle hackle, wrapped it in the middle, and then I put olive brown iced up in the front, and then I had a gold bead in the front. And so I said, geez, this looks kind of cool. So I went up and I went up on the Poudre River to fish in this one spot, Diamond Rock. There's a nice little cliff, and there's a nice little run there, deep run. And I walked out there, and it was hard because I still hadn't had the operation. I couldn't feel the rocks, and I had to be very careful wading out there. But in the first five casts, I caught fish. And, Roger, I got to tell you know what? I know how to tie flies, but I ain't that good at catching fish. So I caught five fish right in a row, and I thought, wow, I must be onto something. And so I had the operation. It was successful. And so then I came up with a companion fly with that, and it's called the Go-To Caddis. And I named it Go-To because those became my go-to flies to fish with. And what I did, the only thing I did different is that in the body, in the abdomen, instead of using the peacock and the pearl crystal flash, I use a chartreuse diamond midge braid, because a lot of our waters have caddis in it. And not that represents a caddis, but, it's one of those flies you're fishing in a fast kind of a deep run like that. They don't have that much time to look at it, but they see that green and maybe they'll take it. And so what I did is I fished that fly exclusively for 2 years on the Poudre and the Big Thompson River, which killed me because, you know, I didn't do any dry fly fish. I was just fishing these flies to see if they would work, and they caught fish. And so I wrote about it in Fly Fisherman magazine, again, to share this little discovery. And what I found out is that you can tie a whole bunch of different configurations of the fly by using different colored beads. In the body, you can use wire, you can use tubing, you can use dubbing, you can use thread. You can just make the body out about anything that you want to try. And so I think it's been a very versatile pattern for me. And again, yeah, it is just it's just an attractive pattern. I don't catch fish with it all the time, but I had a friend of mine who was a guide, and we were fishing on the Big Thompson, and he was on one side of the river and I was on the other, and he said, "What are you catching fish with?" I said, "Well, it's my go-to." And I said, "Do you want one?" And he just says, "No, I don't want to fish with that thing." You know, I said, "Okay, well, don't catch any fish then." But, you know, I was catching fish, and he just couldn't believe it, and I couldn't believe it either. And fishing on the San Juan River, I was with my friend Jude Duran, who was teaching my daughter how to fly fish. So I just sat in the back of the boat, and I said, "Well, what am I going to put on here? I don't want anything to catch fish," and I didn't think it would catch fish in San Juan. So I threw it out the back, and all of a sudden I started hooking up with some of these fish. I'm going, "I'll be doggone. You know, it catches fish here too." So
yeah.
So it's been a very, very successful. Yeah, it's been very successful for me. Yeah. So,
well, we have we had a question come in on the internet from Ed Hovey, and he says, "I seem to struggle tying in biots, for example, on prince nymphs. Any tricks?" So there you go, Ed. You don't use biots, according to Rick here. You're using the wing poly yarn, right? Yeah.
Well, for the white bias on the top of the prince nymph.
Yeah.
I just use the white poly yarn, but now I can feel the biots. Back then I couldn't feel the biots, so I couldn't tell if I was tying it in or not, and they were real cockeyed, and you know, I as you know from other interviews that we've done, is that I believe that good craftsmanship is really important in tying flies.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like my flies to be well crafted. I can tie biots in now, but you know, I don't tie the prince nymph the old way. I just tie it the way that, you know, I had success with that go-to. And so he might do that, but don't give up on the biots, you know.
Any suggestions you can give him for tying in the biots?
Well, you know, one thing that I do is when I pick out the wide biots, you know, I try to have the curve going up with the biots, or sometimes you reverse and have the biots lay down flat. I like to have them curve up, and usually when you peel the biot off the stem, there's a little attachment on it. I try to cut some of that off. But one of the problems I had using the biots before is that I couldn't always cut them really clean. But with that Tweezerman cuticle cutters, I can get pretty close to them when I cut them off, and then I can bury some of the if I'm tying a traditional type of a prince nymph, and then I can tie off and bury the butt ends of those. But again, I haven't tied the prince nymph for all these years because I've had so much success with the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One final question. I know we're running late here, but I wanted to include this because this question is from Skip Clement in Georgia, and he's well known in the fly fishing world. He says, "Rick, I've admired your work for some time. Glad you're part of this always interesting show. I found that tube flies, and measurably to my catch ledger in both salt and fresh waters, save fur and feathers because of the fly portion disengaging with the hooked fish and being so much quicker to just change hooks for any number of reasons. I believe that my increased catch is due to choosing hooks and positioning hooks. For example, if you want a big bushy fly, I'm not stuck with using a 5-0 hook when a much smaller hook will do."
Right.
What are your thoughts on tube flies? So we'll end with that.
I love fishing tube flies. I have a very good friend of mine here who's an expert fly tire of tube flies, and his name is Eric Ishiwata, and I had the great honor of tying with April Vokey some of the flies that she ties fishing. But I got into tying some tube flies, and I really like the tying the tube. First of all, I don't have to contend with that hook during the time process, so I don't stick myself so much, so often. And you can tie some very, very light flies. So what I've been doing is, instead of tying the really large two flies, I've been scaling them back much smaller, and using them for, I use them a lot for fishing still waters. You know, I have a switch rod that I use when it's really windy out, and I'll cast out. But I'm not necessarily doing those spay casts with the rod. I'm just trying to get the fly a little further out when it's windy. But I do love fishing the two flies on an intermediate sinking line. And, you know, one instance, to give you an example, is that I tied some of those two flies, and I had, was going to go fish a lake up at Red Feather Lakes, and I threw my line out there, you know, so I could get into my float tube. And all of a sudden, my rod starts jerking. I'm going, what the heck's going on here? Did I get it caught back there? I thought I cast it out there. I hadn't even gotten my tube in it, and the fly was fluttering down, and a fish took it, and caught a lot of fish that day on those two flies. And you can make a fairly bushy two fly, and it's real light to cast, so it's really nice. And when that hook disengages, you have a better chance of landing that fish. And like your person that was telling about changing the hook size. Yeah, sometimes you can tie and change the size of the hook and go from one species of fish to another species of fish by just downsizing the hook. And you know, you don't necessarily ruin the whole fly if the hook should break, because you can just reattach another one. So mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty cool. Cool. I love to tie those. Yeah. Just tied some up yesterday.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, yeah. We've run out of time here, so we've got to wrap things up.
Darn.
But stick with me here. Rick, we've got a few things to give away here. We're going to give away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International, a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, and a copy of your new book, The Fly Tying Artist, courtesy of Stackpole Books. So. Stick with me, and we'll give these things away, make some people happy, make some people sad, and go from there. The Bristol Bay region of southwest Alaska is home to the largest runs of wild salmon on the planet and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing found anywhere. The Pebble Mine still remains a threat to the region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may also be at risk. The entire fly fishing industry has united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers from across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit SaveBristolBay.org to learn more and to get involved. Again, that's SaveBristolBay.org. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave our website tonight, take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what do you think of the show? Just click on that link, leave your comments, and we'd really appreciate it. So now it's time to give away some of these great prizes we have. The first two are from the winners will come from the drawings that are randomly selected from the registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for the next show so you don't miss out on your chance at the incredible prizes we have to offer. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show by email and get you situated to receive your prize. So the first thing we're giving away is a one-year membership to the Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about FFI, go to flyfishersinternational.org. Great, great organization to be part of. Deals with freshwater, warm water, salt water, worldwide, international, and involved in a lot of conservation efforts. So check them out if you don't win tonight. The winner for that is Zach Funkhauser. Zach Funkhauser. So congratulations, Zach, and I know you'll enjoy your membership. The second thing we're giving away is a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which you can learn more about at AmatoBooks.com. And they are a publisher of several periodicals as well as many books on fishing and fly fishing. So check them out as well for resources for your fly fishing. And our winner for that is Roger Campbell. Up in Wyoming, I think Roger submitted a question tonight. So thanks, Roger, for the question, and thanks for playing and registering for that. So, and I'm sure you'll enjoy that Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So now we'll give away Rick's new book, The Fly Tying Artist, courtesy of Stackpole Books. And Boy, Rick, you just went all out in this book. You've got, I'm just paging through it and looking at the different sections that you have patterns for in here. We go from Betis to Bass to Caddis to Go-To Series, Leech Series, Mayfly Series, Chronomids for still waters, Midges for streams and rivers, Stoneflies, Streamers, the Stillwater Series, Terrestrial Series, and as well as some river and stillwater techniques as well in this book. So it's just a wealth of information. You did a wonderful job. And somebody very lucky is going to, or that person that's paying attention is going to win this book tonight. So so let me clear my queue here. And let's see here. Oh, we have some other questions that came in. Okay, so I think we're ready to go there. Are you still here, Rick?
Yes, I'm with you.
Okay, all right. So, well, let's just throw this one out there. Rick mentioned two types of manufacturers of hooks that he likes using for his flies. What are those two manufacturers? So need them both. And first one that answers that correctly is going to win Rick's book. So,
sounds like a wonderful book. I ought to get it myself.
Yeah, you could probably use it. I mean, it's got a lot of good instructions on tying flies. And, you know, since you told me about how you have problems tying flies sometimes, you know, maybe this will help out.
yes, it would. I could sure use that.
I can't believe you say that you have trouble tying some flies. I just don't believe that. I think you're making that up. I think you're just lazy.
Oh, no, it's true. You can ask Scott Stitzer. I can't tie that no hackle. You know, I just can't tie that fly.
Okay, yeah. So we got a, the first one in here is Bill Atkinson, Taos, New Mexico, and he says the answer is TMC and Daiichi. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, Bill, you just won yourself a book. Bill, what I need from you is I need an address so I can get this to Stackpole and they can get a book out to you. So I've got your email address. I've got your name. Give me your mailing address, and you can fill it in the same form you just answered the question in, and we will then get that out to you. Or you can send your address to info@askaboutflyfishing.com. info@askaboutflyfishing.com, and we'll get you hooked up with that book. I know you're going to enjoy it. A lot of these patterns are definitely work down there in your neck of the woods because the San Juan's not too far away from you there. So enjoy, and thanks for paying attention, and thanks for playing. Rick, hey, again, really appreciate you being on with us and sharing your knowledge again, and wonderful accomplishment on this new book of yours. Should be very proud of that. And so thanks for sharing your knowledge with us tonight.
Well, thank you, Roger, for inviting me.
Yeah, it's been great having you. Hopefully everyone's found the archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link on our top-line menu. In the archive, you'll find over 285 shows, I believe, now we're up to. And just search for anything that you think you might be interested. Trout, tarpon, you know, Madison River, fly tying, and you'll find all kinds of shows. It's just a wealth of education that I know you'll enjoy. So check it out and explore a little bit. Our next broadcast will be on February 6th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And that show, I will be interviewing Landon Mayer, and our topic for the show will be the hunt for giant trout. Landon has fished and researched many of the best places to catch giant trout and fishing locations from Alaska to Maine. Landon has created the ultimate bucket list for places to fish. So join us and discover what makes these fisheries so special and learn the secrets to catching these monster trout. We'd also like to thank the Fly Fishers International, Amato Books, Stackpole Books, Whipreiki Fishing Lodge, Baja Fly Fishing, and Watermaster for sponsoring our show tonight. And don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.